proceed to the third case, today, appeal number 08-1177 and 08-1615, United States versus Darren Moore. Ms. Bierma.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Erica Bierma, and I'm appearing on behalf of Darwin Moore and Bruce Knutson. Also appearing at counsel table is Joanna Christensen. This case is rather simple. It's whether Moore and Knutson, who photocopied entry forms to increase their chances of winning a contest at a casino, does federal law prohibit that conduct? The district court erred in finding...
Are you arguing that the indictment does not state an offense, or are you arguing that there is insufficient evidence?
Neither, Your Honor. We're arguing that... We're not arguing the sufficiency of the indictment or the sufficiency of the evidence. It's that we agree with the government that what the evidence was, but we're saying that what they did is not a crime, is what we're arguing. It's not.
So the indictment's insufficient because it doesn't state a federal offense.
It's not that it doesn't state a federal offense. It's that the indictment does not. Taking all of the facts in the indictment is true, it is not a crime to do what they did.
I think that's what I said.
Yes, Your Honor. And the district court erred in finding that Mr. Knutson and Mr. Moore intended to steal and thereby convicting them. Knutson and Moore did not dispute the government's evidence at trial. Knutson and Moore did not disguise their identities. They used their real names, their real dates of birth,
They have to do that, otherwise the scheme doesn't work.
But it's not an illegal end to the scheme. I mean, they were very open.
It doesn't make any sense to use a fictitious name and have that person win the $10,000 prize.
But if they were to actually be engaging in an illegal scheme, then they would have tried to hide their actions in some way or another. But they were very open and honest about everything that they were doing. They did nothing to conceal their identities. When they were in the casino, they didn't have disguises on. They didn't hide their faces. They didn't try to alter their appearances in any way.
They did deprive the casino, did they not, of its ability to distribute its money as the casino wanted to distribute its money?
Well, the casino was going to distribute $5,000, $10,000.
In a certain way to certain people under certain circumstances. And your clients thwarted that and had them distribute it some other way. Is that not right?
They had it distributed consistent with the rules of the contest and the way that the casino was going to distribute
the contest. The contest had printed entry slips, and those entry slips had to be earned through participation in the casino's games for a certain amount of time, right?
That wasn't the exhaustive way of the way that people could obtain the entry forms, though, because blackjack dealers had the discretion to award additional entry forms. You had to be present the day that they were going to award the prizes.
So can't we assume that in doing that, the casino had some idea of how many people would actually be entered into this contest?
Well, the casino, I don't think that the promotions manager in the casino itself knew exactly how many people were going to be involved in this contest because of these other manners in which people could obtain entry forms because they weren't going to be present in which the day that the drawing was held.
Because but it would still be one of the entry slips that was approved by and manufactured by the casino, not the umpteen others that your clients manufactured on their own with paper at Office Max or something, right? You diluted the chance of the legitimate entrant, and that's not what the casino wanted, right?
That's correct, but also the casino engaged in other conduct itself that diluted its own ability to determine who its winners were by, again, you know, if people weren't going to be present the day that the drawing was held or if there was an entry form on the floor or
going
something
back to
like that.
Wait, as I understand it, if you were not there, you didn't win.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did they then draw another name for that, or did they? I don't understand how that worked.
Well,
they drew Judge Ripple's name, and he happened to be in South Bend.
Then you would not be able to win.
Did they then draw another name out of the barrel?
I believe so.
So they're going to exhaust the whole $50,000 on this day.
Right, regardless of who won. But, I mean, you did have to be present the day that the drawing was held, but there were other manners in which people could obtain entry forms if they were going to be present that particular day that wasn't limited to the confines of the rules.
But just one person abiding by the rules would have had, as I figured it, 0.00006% chance of winning, and each of these fellows had a 30% chance of winning. That's pretty good odds, isn't it?
It's pretty good odds, Your Honor, but, I mean, in looking at that barrel, in looking at Ms. Lyons' testimony, it's to say that there are only 15,000 entries in that barrel is not accurate, because if you take the 15,000 entries divided by the period of time in the contest, then that's only averaging approximately 300 entries per day, and that means that Ho-Chunk Casino is paying $3 per entry, and obviously that's not a very profitable raffle if they're paying $3 per entry in this raffle out to an individual who's winning. So there were significantly more individual or more entries in that raffle than what Ms. Lyons testified to of the 15,000.
Well, there were a lot of people that got the entry blanks and didn't fill them up. Right? Tour buses would come in and people would leave and throw them on the floor or take them with them or something. So the casino was I have a hard time imagining the casino underestimated its chances of being financially rewarded for engaging in this contest.
Well, that's correct, but there were significantly more entries, and there were significantly there were other people that had numerous entries that had been sitting and playing blackjack, because it wasn't just you had to have a blackjack. I mean, there were the comps. There were, you know, other people that were preferred player members, things like that, I mean, that were acquiring significant numbers of entries also. And, I mean, obviously they were
The who? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Other players in the casino.
I said something before that.
There were all the other manners in which that they had people.
No, other individuals.
Yeah, the other people that were gambling in the casino, and the blackjack dealers could award more than just playing blackjack for 1 hour or having a blackjack. There were other people that were preferred card players or that were given comps because they were preferred card or players in the casino.
I see.
That we were given more entries.
That's what I missed. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. And the district court also erred in concluding that Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson intended to steal. The casino knew about Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson's actions prior to the drawing. The casino watched Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson deposit these entries into the raffle for a week prior to the drawing. They received a copy of the entry form prior to the drawing, a copy of the paper prior to the drawing from Ms. Grace Hewitt. They still allowed Mr. Knutson to win, fill out all the prize paperwork, and walk out the door with the prize money. Mr. Knutson was used in publicity for the casino. He had his picture taken with his check of the prize money. The casino knew what Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson were doing prior to the drawing. And they didn't stop Mr. Knutson in the parking lot. They didn't call law enforcement and indicate that he couldn't leave because he had stolen the prize money from the casino.
How then was this prosecution commenced?
Approximately a couple of months after Mr. Knutson had won the $10,000 prize, it was commenced in Sauk County Circuit Court for theft by misrepresentation, which a circuit court judge had dismissed. And then it was refiled as an additional theft by misrepresentation, which was dismissed again by a different Sauk County Circuit Court judge. And then approximately 2 years later, the federal government indicts on the conspiracy to defraud the United States and the theft count, and the government dismissed the theft count.
The government cites Bell against the United States in its brief. You do not cite it at all or deal with it. Can you? What is your view of why that case is not controlling? I presume you do not think it controls controlling.
That's correct, Your Honor. Bell is different than this case because Bell involved theft by false pretenses and misrepresentation. The individual in Bell filled out paperwork with false information on it, and in this particular instance, they filled out all the paperwork with their correct information, their correct dates of birth, and their correct identities.
Are you still contending that the casino is not the victim?
No, Your Honor. I'm just solely relying on that this is not a federal crime, and I'm not...
So you've abandoned that?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And if Your Honors would like, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Graber.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dan Graber. I represent the United States. I was the trial attorney in the trial below in front of Judge Crabb. The defendants were arguing that down below they were moving under 12b-3, motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. And they were attacking the indictment, saying, and they're bringing up the same argument here, that we didn't charge a conspiracy to do an unlawful act. And they're basing their entire argument on this unlawfulness concept. And as I try to point out in the brief, Your Honors, we did charge. What we charged, and counsel's incorrect when she says we charged a conspiracy to defraud. Under 371, we didn't go under the defraud prong. We went under conspiracy to violate a substantive statute. The substantive statute that we used was 18 U.S.C. section 1167B. And that statute prohibits people from taking and carrying away money from an Indian casino with intent to steal. And that's what we charged out, that Knutson and Moore had agreed to take money from Ho-Chunk, more than $50,000, with intent to steal. That's what was charged in the indictment. We laid out in three pages in the indictment the manner and means and how that conspiracy would be done and how the elements would be met. And as the court knows, under 7C, when there's an attack on the indictment, sufficiency of the indictment, we look to see whether the indictment covers the elements, whether there's enough detail in the indictment to allow the defendant to do a defense, and whether there's enough in there to allow the defendant to plead double jeopardy. That's the test. And Judge Crabb found that that test had been met in this case and that we had put in enough to meet the elements for 371. Their real beef in this case, Your Honors, and counsel just went through all the different factors on why they're going after us on the intent element. It's not the illegal object element. We clearly charged illegal object because we charged a violation of a federal statute. What they're going after us on is the intent element. Do they have an intent to steal? And you heard, they took the position from day one, we don't have an intent to steal. The rules didn't say we couldn't counterfeit. Look, we put our real names on the forms. Look, we were out and open in front of the cameras doing what we were doing. Of course we didn't have an intent to steal. And our position was quite opposite. They did engage in a variety of fraudulent conduct that would show an intent to steal. And because there was this difference, that's a factual issue that has to be decided by the jury. And that's why that couldn't be decided on the 12B3 motion and a pretrial motion. There is no such thing as summary judgment in criminal cases. You have to let that go to the jury, and the jury will decide, can the government prove intent to steal or not? And so that's where the case, that's why their motion was properly denied by the court, because what they were asking for was a motion for summary judgment. Then we go to trial, again, on the issue of intent to steal, because they were taking the position we did not have that requisite intent. And we put in our proof, they put in their proof, and the court then issued an order finding you're both guilty and I find intent to steal. They do make a sufficiency of the evidence claim. They may not perfect it real well in their brief, but they do make that, and so I respond to it and go through all the intent evidence that we have. The argument they're making that, well, the rules didn't prescribe it, we go through, and as the court said before, you know, you had to go there and you had to register at guest services and you use your players club card. And that's how the casino would keep track of your play. And if you did on the slots, if you did 50, for every 50 points on the slots, you got a form. Or if you were playing blackjack or poker, for every hour, you got a form. So the way it worked is when you went in, you register with guest services, you show them your player's card so they know they can keep track of your play. They give you a free form for that. And then for every hour you play, you get another form. Or for every 50 points on slots, you get another form. You earn your forms, and that's the whole point. The casino wanted people to go in there and earn their forms. Those are what the rules set out. These defendants knew the rules, and they played by the rules, and to the extent that they did register with guest services, and they played enough that between the two of them, they earned legitimately 23 forms. And yet what they submitted into that contest barrel was 9,355 forms, which were the counterfeits. And their little scheme worked because there were five drawings, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and 10 o'clock on the 14th. The first drawing, first one picked, is Bruce Knutson, and it's one of his counterfeit forms. And that came out at trial. The promotions manager said, yep, that's a counterfeit.
I'm surprised they didn't win more than once.
It is amazing, because they stuck around for their other four, and they didn't get it. They didn't get it. And it is amazing, because with that 9,355, you'd think they would. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll rest on my brief.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Birma, anything you'd like to add?
Just a few brief comments, Your Honors. I would like to just reiterate that what Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson did is simply not a crime. The government couldn't prove its intent to steal because the casino knew ahead of time what the two individuals were doing. They gave them the money. They used Mr. Knutson in their publicity, and as a winner, they took his picture and they used him for promotions. They allowed Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson to leave the casino with the money, and they didn't contact law enforcement until several months later. And just to kind of address the government's issue and the court's concern about the odds of the contest, in the record is the videotape from the casino, and there were significantly more entries than the 15,000 that the court will be able to see, and that's why they didn't win any of the additional prizes, is because there were significantly more entries in there than what Ms. Lyons had testified to, and so they didn't have as great of odds as what Ms. Lyons may have testified to. And we'd respectfully request that the court vacate Mr. Moore and Mr. Knutson's judgments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both sides. We will, of course, take this case under advisement and proceed.